The new American Weekly presents Front Page Drama.
It would have meant all the world to me to have you say that when I needed you and loved you. But now, I dare say there wasn't such a scandal after all as you feared.
Oh, please, Lola, don't be so bitter. After all, any man in my place might...
Oh, no. No.
Could Lola cast off the shackles of the past and go on to a new life, new happiness, a life made radiant by a love deeper and warmer than any she had dared hope for? Listen as Front Page Drama brings you a touching story from the files of the American Weekly, the great magazine that's distributed with a leading newspaper on sale in this city. It was a chill autumn night with the stars bright overhead, and a sharp wind that sent the fallen leaves whirling over the ground. A solitary man strode whistling through the park toward the bridge that spanned the swiftly flowing river. Suddenly he stopped short, staring in horror at the slender figure of the girl on the bridge, and then ran toward her.
Hold on! I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Let go of me. You don't know what you'd do if you were I.
Well, that water's deep down there and icy cold. I certainly don't want to plunge in after you. If you...
I don't want you to.
In heaven's name, what's the trouble?
I can't talk about it. Please let me go.
No chance. You're not very young to be so desperate and foolish. Pretty, too, I should say. You didn't look so woebegone.
You have no right to interfere.
You have no right to throw away the life God gave you. And a year from now, you'll wonder how you could have thought of such a thing.
No. There's nothing. There's nothing now for
me. Oh, come now. There's always something. You live near here?
No, I just came here from Woodbridge.
Permit me to introduce myself. I'm Mark Crawford, head of the English department at the college here. And you?
Lola Welch.
Very well, Miss Welch. I'm not sure I'm so pleased to meet you. But I can't leave you here nor turn you over to the police.
Oh, no, no, please.
And come to think of it, can you use a typewriter? Do ordinary office work?
Well, yes, I guess so, but...
Very well, then. I can offer you a job. My secretary just got married and left. I need another. Didn't expect to pull one out of the river, but...
I'm sure you mean to be kind, but...
So there you are. If it's money you need, not much money. But then the work is light, and you're no bargain at the moment. I must say so. But I'm willing to take a chance, and I think you're better.
I suppose I have no choice?
None at all. Now, where are you stopping?
No place. Just got off the 10 o'clock train.
Well, you can't spend the night here in the park. That's neither safe nor proper. I'll take you to my sister's for the time being. She has a couple of rooms she rents to students, and one of them is vacant. She's a charming person. Asks no questions.
I suppose I have to thank you. You must be...
A fool, perhaps? Well, I'm certainly allergic to jumping into icy water to haul out a crazy kid who...
Wait a minute. I want to ask you, please. Will you promise not to question me? Not to try to find out.
Oh, yes. Anyhow, I'm sadly lacking in curiosity. But come, you're shivering. We must get you into a warm place for the night. Good morning, Miss Wells.
Oh, good morning, Professor Crawford. Isn't it a lovely day?
Delightful. Crisp and clear. Sunshine, the color of those chrysanthemums on your desk. Much the color of your hair, too.
Oh, no, my hair's not nearly that yellow. But they're more the color of that tie you have on. Isn't that the one you told me the Dwight girl gave you last Christmas?
It's not yellow, it's gold, Sally Dwight told me. She should know. Very intelligent girl, best student in my Shakespeare course. And pretty, too.
And she thinks you have golden eyes. I'm sorry, but when the transoms open, whatever is said in your office drifts right out here to my little cubbyhole.
I'm glad you thought to brighten your cubbyhole with these chrysanthemums.
But I didn't. Professor Beach brought them.
Beach is not a professor, not even an assistant professor. He's an instructor, merely. And a dull one at that. What did you want to see me about?
Why, I don't believe about anything.
People should at least make a pretext about wanting to see me if they come here.
He just stopped by to tell me a funny story about...
With his posies clutched in his hot little hand. Oh, well. If his flowers and his jokes can make you laugh, even smile, more power to him.
But don't I smile and laugh quite a bit, Professor Crawford?
More often than you did. But even now, after all these weeks, even at times like our picnic in the park last Sunday, the ghost appears.
The ghost?
In your eyes. A shadow. A haunted look with a question in it. I know it has to do with a thing I must not ask you and never shall.
It's just... I'm still not sure. I'm afraid...
You have nothing to be afraid of. Nothing. Well, I must run over to the library for a moment. I'll be back in time for my 10 o'clock class.
I'll have the notes for your lecture all typed up by then.
Thanks. And please remember that according to the best usage, there is but one E in judgment, if I happen to use the word. Shall I leave this door open? Seems a bit stuffy in here.
Oh, yes, do, please. He didn't like it a bit that Professor... Mr. Beach gave me flowers. He didn't like it a bit.
I beg your pardon. Is this Professor Crawford's office? I'm looking for... Lola. Lola!
She stared at him, the man she had both hoped and feared to see again. And at the sight of him, the dark past rushed over her once more. Listen in just a moment to the heartwarming conclusion to this front-page drama from the files of the American Weekly. An intimate, behind-the-iron-curtain picture of the loves, hates, and fears of the most dangerous man on earth is presented in the coming issue of the great American Weekly, carried with a leading Sunday newspaper in this city. Entitled, I Was Stalin's Nurse, this is the first detailed account of Joseph Stalin's intimate life to reach the Western world. The report comes from a man who served as Stalin's personal nurse and physical therapist. Recently, this man was able to escape from behind the Iron Curtain, and he entrusted his story to Boris Karanovich, a fellow escapee, and Serge Fliegers, a well-known specialist on Soviet affairs. You will want to read I Was Stalin's Nurse, an exclusive article appearing in the coming issue of the great new American Weekly, carried with a leading Sunday newspaper in this city. Now, back to our front-page drama. Lola, her eyes enormous in her suddenly pale face, stared at the man who had walked in so unexpectedly and said...
Howard, what are you doing here? How did you find me?
I got your address from Marie. They told me at the place where you're staying that you'd be here.
Is Marie any better?
Oh, her nerves are pretty well shot, but I guess she has it coming to her. But you, Lola, she told me the whole story. That it wasn't you, that you covered up for her. Took the brunt of it.
I'd have told you that if you'd given me the chance.
I know, I was a fool, but...
Looking at you brings it all back to me. The shame, the heartbreak.
But it's all behind you now, darling. Everything's going to be all right. That's why I came, to make it all up to you. People will understand, and I want to take you back with me. I want to marry you, just as we'd planned.
It would have meant all the world to me to have you say that when I needed you and loved you. But now... I dare say there wouldn't have been such a scandal after all, as you feared.
Oh, please, Lola, don't be so bitter. After all, any man in my place would have...
No. No, that's one of the things I've learned since I came here. That there's a very different kind of a man from you, Howard. A man who will befriend a heartbroken, desperate girl and take a chance with her.
By the way, Miss Welch, I want you to... Oh, sorry. I'll leave.
No, please stay. Professor Crawford, this is Howard Parr.
How do you do, Professor?
Perhaps I'd better close the door so that our conversation won't be so plainly audible to those who may be passing in the corridor.
I have something to tell you.
Yes, Professor Crawford, I'm sorry you must lose a good secretary, but Lola and I...
It's what you promised never to ask me. About what happened in Woodbridge just before I came here 6 weeks ago, when I was about to be married, as I told you. My parents died when I was little, and my uncle brought me up with his daughter, my cousin, just about my age, who looks something like me.
Yes, that much I know.
Well, one night, rather early one morning, a girl wearing a red coat and driving a black roadster ran into a man and killed him.
But it's come out since it was the fellow's own fault. He darted out into the middle of the
street. She was drunk, you see, and she'd been to a rowdy hangout where no nice girl should have gone. She was wearing my red coat.
But it wasn't you. No man with any sense could possibly think it was you.
Oh, you would have known that, wouldn't you, Mark? You would have known. And it wasn't I. It was my cousin, Marie. We often swap clothes, you see, and we both drove that roadster. But you see, Howard didn't give me the benefit of that doubt.
Well, now, after all, Lola, I was just afraid...
Yes, he was afraid of a scandal. So he played safe. He broke our engagement. And there I was with my trousseau already. My life shot to pieces. I rushed out and I took a train here.
You poor kid.
Really, Lola, to tell all this before a third person is...
I distinctly have the impression, my good young man, that you are the third person in this case.
Yes. And Howard, I'm so glad you came. I can never be thankful enough.
Oh, yes, Lola, darling, I knew
you... Because I've never been sure, you see, that I was quite free of you. I've been so afraid that if I saw you again, you'd still matter to me. And now I know you don't. You're right. It's all behind me now. I look at you and I realize I never want to see you again.
There's an excellent train to Woodbridge at 11, old boy. Express. You can just make it.
Well, now, well, what? Look here, I...
Besides, frankly, Howard, you've taken on weight. And it's not a bit becoming to
you. No, quite. Obviously.
Well, if anybody thinks I'm going to stand here and be insulted...
By no means. Allow me.
You may live to regret this. Goodbye.
My dear, do you mean to tell me you were actually enough in love with that pompous young man with a thick nose to...
His nose is a bit on the thick side, isn't it? But you'll be late to class.
Oh, hang the lecture, Lola. My own dear heart. When you called me Mark, and you did...
I often have, to myself. It's a lovely name.
Come here to me. Oh, I've so longed to hold you like this. Your hair is so soft and sweet. And there's no shadow in your eyes.
You'll never see the ghost of a shadow again, Mark.
You think you can stand being the wife of the professor?
Well, I couldn't stand not to. But there's one thing I must insist upon.
Oh, yes, 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 dearest. Anything. What is it?
You've got to take off the Dwight girl's yellow tie tonight and throw it away. It looks just like scrambled eggs, and you're never to wear it again. And come to think of it, her nose is a bit on the thick side, too.
You have just heard the story of Lola Welch, who, just when life seemed darkest, met the love that was to mean all the world to her. This has been another front-page drama from the files of the American Weekly. Naturally, real names have not been used. Who is your favorite writer of crime fiction? Surely, Mignon G. Eberhardt, author of Speak No Evil, House of Storm, and many other mystery novels, has thrilled and chilled you with her dramatic stories. And in next week's great new American Weekly, that nationally known writer of crime fiction chooses a tale of terror, arson, and murder as the true story she wishes she'd created. Watch for The Clock Struck 7 by Mignon G. Eberhardt, one of the many exciting features in this week's issue of the great new American Weekly, carried with the leading Sunday newspaper in this city.